Janesha Gaura Rupa
Janesha Gaura Rupa
Gaura Sattva Nishevita
Gaura Sattva Nishevita
Pratiyata Braja Pratiyata Brajam Neha
Pratiyata Brajam Neha
Steyam Sri Bisu Madhyamaha
Steyam Sri Bisu Madhyamaha
Rajani night. Esha this Kaura Rupa fearsome in appearance. Angora Sattva by fearsome creatures. Nishevita populated. Pratiyata. Please return. Brajam to the cowherd village of Braj. Na, not. Iha, here. Stayam, should stay. Strivi, women. Sumajama. O slender-waisted girls. Translation of purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. This night is quite frightening, and frightening creatures are lurking about. Return to Braj, slender-waisted girls. This is not a proper place for women. Translation responsible. This night is quite frightening. And frightening creatures are lurking about. Return to Braj. Slender-waisted girls. This is not a place.
This is not a place
for women. Mentioned before that this part of the Bhagavatam is the smiling face of Krishna. So this is what makes Krishna smile more than anything else. Because the goal of life is to make Krishna smile or make Krishna happy. And this Krishna consciousness, that's our goal. Anuku yena, Krishnanu shilana. Anuku means that we must have a favorable attitude towards Krishna. And if we are favorable towards Krishna in our devotion, then Krishna will smile at us like that. So that is the goal, to make Krishna smile like that. We don't want to see Krishna angry at us like that. Although sometimes he will be angry, but that's his prerogative. But in general, devotees want to see Krishna smiling. So this Bhagavatam, in this section at least, this is where Krishna is smiling the most. Well, this is what makes Krishna smile. This is what gives Krishna the greatest happiness. So we'll read the purport. And in the purport here, it's a fairly long purport. And it's a conversation between Krishna and the gopis. So in terms of intimacy, in terms of what's being revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the most intimate part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, what is being revealed here. So we'll read it through and we can listen. This is a conversation between Krishna and the gopis. This has nothing to do with the material world. It's very elevated. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written the following charming commentary on this verse. The gopis thought, "Alas, alas, even after shattering our family responsibilities, our sobriety and our shame, and enjoying us day after day, and after now dragging us here by the sound of his flute, he is asking us why we have come." As the gopis cast sidelong glances to one another, the Lord said, "If you try to tell me that you have come here to get night-blooming flowers to use in the worship of God, and that it is these flowers you are looking at with your sidelong glances, I will have to reject your excuse as unacceptable, since neither the time, place, nor persons involved are appropriate." This is the Lord's meaning in the verse beginning, Rajani. He might have said, "Even though there is abundant moonlight, this time of night is very fearsome because many snakes, scorpions and other dangerous creatures too small for you to see are lying beneath the creepers, roots and twigs. Therefore this time is unsuitable for gathering flowers. And not only the time, but also the place is unsuitable for you to gather flowers. Only the time, but also this place is unsuitable for you. And not only the time, but this place is also unsuitable for you to gather flowers. Because at night terrible creatures such as tigers are abroad here. Therefore you should go back to Braj." But the gopis may object, "Let us just rest for a few minutes and then we will go." Then the Lord might reply, "Women shouldn't remain in this kind of place. In other words, because of the time and place, it is wrong for persons like yourselves to stay here even for a moment. Furthermore, by the word Su Majjama, O splendid wasted ones, the Lord implied, you are beautiful young girls and I am a beautiful young boy. Because you are all very chaste and I am a brahmachari, as confirmed by the words Krishna Brahmachari in the Shruti Gopal Upanishad, there should be no fault in our being in the same place. Nonetheless, the mind can never be trusted, neither yours nor my own." The Lord's inner eagerness thus hinted at is obvious as we read his words between the lines, as follows. "If out of shyness you cannot tell me the reason you have come, then don't speak. I already know it anyway. So just listen as I tell it to you." Thus the Lord speaks the words beginning, Rajani. The following statement by Krishna is based on an alternative meaning of the verse derived when the Sanskrit words are separated in a different way. The alternative separation, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, would be Rajani esha agora rupa agora satwa nishe vita pratiyata brajam na iha steyam stribi sumajamaha. Through Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, Krishna now explains the meaning of this division of words. The pervasive moonshine has made this night appear not at all fearsome, and therefore this forest is populated by harmless creatures such as deer, agora satwai, or else by animals such as tigers that are harmless because of Vrindavan's naturally non-violent atmosphere. Consequently, this night should not frighten you, or else Krishna may have meant you should not be afraid of your own husbands and other relatives, because the night being populated by fearsome animals, they will not come near this place. Therefore, please do not go back to Braj, na pratijyata, but stay here in my company, iha steyam. The gopis may ask the Lord, "How are you staying here?" The Lord answers, "With women." "But you are satisfied to keep just any women? But are you satisfied to keep just any women in your company?" The Lord replies to this with the word Su Majjama, meaning only women who are young and beautiful, who have slender waists, namely yourselves, should stay here with me and not others. Thus we can appreciate that Krishna's statements are full of considerate as well as neglectful statements, sentiments. Krishna's words are certainly brilliant because according to the rules of Sanskrit grammar, They may be understood in either of two opposite ways. In the first case, as translated above, Lord Krishna continues to tease the gopis by telling them the night is dangerous and inauspicious and that they should go home. But Krishna is simultaneously saying exactly the opposite, namely, that there is absolutely no reason for the gopis to fear coming to the Lord, that the night is quite auspicious, and that the girls should under no circumstances go back home. Thus Lord Krishna simultaneously teases and enchants the gopis with his words. Om Gyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Pititanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here we become further enlightened about this conversation between Krishna and the gopis by the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's not easy for people to understand Krishna, right? It's not people to even easy to understand God in this day and age. It is said in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that when Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, it specifically mentions that he saw that the residents of Kali Yuga had become faithless. So because of lack of faith in Kali Yuga, because people are disappointed in every single relationship in their life, right? Everyone is disappointed. The fathers do not act properly, the mothers do not act properly, the brothers, the sisters do not act properly, the family members, extended, do not act properly. Everyone we meet is a breakdown of faith within the relationships. So because of this breakdown of faith in the relationships, then when it comes to people believing in God, they say, well, why should I believe in God? Right? I can't trust any person I've met. Why would I believe in a supreme person? He must be the same as everyone else. So therefore, it is said within Kali Yuga particularly, people don't have faith. So what to speak? First of all, we have to get them to believe in God. Then from God, then we have to elevate them to the concept of the personal form of God, which is mentioned within the Vedas. So first of all, you may come to the point of Lord Narayan, and you try to understand that God is Lord Narayan. Now that's not easy to understand, because he has four arms, which is beyond our experience, right? I remember the first Christmas that I ever went back home for the family Christmas gathering, Christmas dinner. Then we had a big debate, myself, and I was only a new devotee, I'd only been a devotee about 9 months, and my presentation of Krishna consciousness was far too fanatical and immature, and I told my drunken grandmother that she did not love God. So that was it. She smashed her fist on the bench. I will not tolerate that. Smashed her fist on it. I will not tolerate it. And then it was, and I said, you don't love God. And she got all emotional. And I just stuck to my point, which was true, but it was a completely wrong presentation of the philosophy. The point was correct, but the presentation was not good. So my uncles came to her rescue. So they all jumped in. And my uncle Robert, who lives on the farm down in Tasmania, he was the only one in the family who went all the way through university and got the degree. Everyone else left school and, you know, got jobs and all the rest of it, but he got the degree. So he was the pundit within the family. So he came in. He came in with the like the all-conquering, you know, statements from Shastra to defeat me. Your religion cannot be true because, to clinch the entire argument, because you worship a god with an elephant head. This is ridiculous. Just see how ridiculous you've become like that. So I argued back with him. I said, no, that's true. Ganesh exists. You know, there is someone with an elephant head. Yes, we do have a god. And I said, he's not the supreme god, but he does have an elephant head. So we can understand, people don't even believe in God these days. What to speak of people who believe in God? What to speak of God having, you know, and his associates having elephant heads and four arms? Right? It's very difficult for people to... You're talking about Kali Yuga people. Well, if you read the headline of the newspaper this morning, you know, if you walk over to the shop and get the newspaper and read the headline, it'll be something totally mundane. I remember yesterday's headline, or the day before, was football player hits fan. Like, to take it to the highest level of transcendental subject matter in Kali Yuga, I mean, who cares? Really? Seriously, who cares? I mean, it's wrong. You know, what? Then you could write the article, and they write an article on it, right? Like a whole analysis, right? Right. And what's the commentary that we would give? It is wrong. Don't do it. Right. That's the end of the comment. And what else do you have to say? There's nothing else to say, right? But they'll write a whole commentary on it. You know, AFL players are in too much stress, and fans should not demand so much. Who cares? You know. So when people are on this level, you try to introduce to them something very high about God, it's very difficult for people to comprehend. So Krishna, it is stated, he's even more difficult to understand even than Lord Narayan. Right? Because Lord Narayan is majestic and all-powerful. Krishna is simple, right? And his pastimes are just very human-like. Right? He's not showing godly pastimes all the time, he's just showing very human-like pastimes. And we have to accept that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. It's a long way for people to come, right, in Kali Yuga. Yet, it is the fact that this is the supreme personality of Godhead. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing out and teaching us that this is the supreme Lord. And we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam at the moment in our Bhakti Vaibhav course. And one of the things that we're learning is that the reason Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken the way it is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, because Shukadeva Goswami is an expert preacher. And one of the points that we have to learn from Srimad Bhagavatam is the presentation of the philosophy has to be expert. You can't come in and tell someone who's brand new, you know, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead necessarily. And this may be too much for the person to grasp. You may have to give them gradual installments of the philosophy to bring them to the point where they can understand Krishna as being the Supreme Lord. So Shukadeva Goswami does not go straight to Krishna being the Supreme Lord, the pastimes in the 10th canto, but gradually he elevates everyone's consciousness. And what does he speak of in the 2nd canto? Because the 1st canto is just the pastime leading to Shukadeva speaking. He begins to speak in the 2nd canto, and where does he begin? The creation, yeah. Basically, the second canon is about the creation, the secondary creation. First canon is called creation. Secondary canon is called secondary creation, or the cosmic manifestation. So, the point is that you have to understand that this supreme Lord, who is lying in a causal ocean, in a mystic slumber called Yoga Nidra, and who is, as he exhales and inhales, unlimited universes come out of his pores and then recede back through his pores. Krishna is the source of that person. Right? This is the point. This is what you have to come to understand. So when you read these pastimes here, you won't think Krishna is being lustful by speaking to the gopis in this way. Right? Because if Krishna is just being lustful, right, and he's just an ordinary person, right, and you say, well, it's just like any ordinary lusty boy or girl in this world, right, then that's not a proper equation. You can't say that Krishna is like that, because Krishna has already been shown to be lying in the causal ocean in a mystic slumber, and when he's breathing, universes are coming in and out of his pores. So how is that? You know, that's not an ordinary activity. So then how could a person like that get captivated by mundane lust? How would that be possible? How would it equate? An all-powerful entity like that. Just like, you know, when we're asleep, you know, I mean, what comes out of our pores? You know, bad odours, right? And sometimes perspiration, right? It's just, it's the body's excretory system, right? When Krishna breathes, there's universes coming in and out. You know, maybe you can take a video of yourself while you're asleep just to see if it happens, but there's a good chance that there isn't any universes coming out, right? And the reason is because Krishna is on the platform of Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. Lord Brahma makes this very clear in the Brahma Samhita. There is nothing mundane about him. He is on the platform of Shuddha Sattva. What does Shuddha mean?
Pure.
Pure, right? Vishuddha Sattva. Vishuddha means completely pure or totally pure, right? No morsel of anything impure within his consciousness, right? He is completely on the spiritual platform. So therefore, it cannot be said that anything which Krishna is doing here in the Srimad Bhagavatam is mundane or to do with ordinary material activities or motivations. There's nothing material in the motivation. So therefore it is, should I say, it is free from the three modes of material nature. And we will only understand this pastime properly when we also become free from the three modes of material nature. And that's what Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that when you become free from the three modes of material nature by the practice of bhakti yoga or devotional service. Right? So this is the key point. The key point is that we must perform devotional service, right, to become free from the three modes of material nature. Srimad Bhagavatam says this is the most effective way of becoming free from the three modes of material nature by bhakti yoga. It is more powerful, especially within Kali Yuga, than the process of yoga or jnana, right? Or even karma. Right, that. Jnana means sankhya. What does sankhya mean? To count, yeah, to analyze. Right? So sankhya or jnana means one will become analytical, neti neti, not this, not that, right? Spirit is different from earth, water, fire, air, ether, right? The five knowledge acquiring senses, the five working senses, the five sense objects, right? Mind, intelligence, false ego, the 24 elements, the Mahabhutas. It is not anything to do with that, right? Matter and spirit are two different things. So you can follow that type of process to become self-realized. But in Kali Yuga, it may not be so easy. Even when you start talking about it in class, everyone starts falling asleep. What to speak of practicing it? All you have to do is talk about it and everyone starts going. That's very interesting. Like that. So what about the yoga process? Right? Ashtanga yoga, right? That's a very rigorous way to understand the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Krishna says in the 12th chapter of the Gita, in the bhakti section of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that it is troublesome, right? And it is a great burden to follow the impersonal path of realization, dhyana or yoga, like that, to realize the Supreme is very difficult. He says it's far easier to perform bhakti. By performing bhakti yoga, then you can understand Krishna easily. Krishna says in the 18th chapter of the Gita, Bhaktya mama bijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Tatva means?
Truth.
Right? You can understand me in truth only by devotion. Right? It's a very easy process, but it's the most powerful process also, to realize Krishna in truth. Right? So Srimad Bhagavatam points out in the second chapter of the first canto, it is pointed out that in order for devotional service to be highly effective, one must perform it from the platform of the mode of goodness, because then it will be far easier to understand Krishna. Right? Sridhar Swami, I think it is, one of the commentators on the Bhagavatam, when Prabhupada used to write his Bhaktivedanta purports, he would have a big black book. And in the big black book, there was the commentaries of 12 different acharyas. Right? Sridhar Swami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, I think Madhvacharya, all these different Acharya, Bhakti Sananda Sarasvati Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, right? And he would look through all the commentaries and then he would take out the essence and then he would write his Bhaktivedanta purport. So I think Sridhar Swami says in one of his commentaries on the 11th canto, he says that the mode of goodness being Shuddha Sattva, not Shuddha Sattva, Sattva Guna, and the mode of pure goodness, he says they're very similar in their disposition. They look very similar, right? Obviously they're not exactly the same, but they're very similar like that. And he makes the point, because it is conducive, because we're obviously not in the mode of pure goodness, and we're not going to go straight into the mode of pure goodness from the mode of passion or ignorance. So we have to at least go into the platform of the mode of goodness, perform devotional service in the mode of goodness, then we can move into pure goodness gradually, purify our consciousness. Right? That's why Prabhupada said this is a springboard to enter into Krishna consciousness. So this is the point. You have to perform devotional service in the mode of goodness and elevate your consciousness. Then you'll understand Krishna's pastimes. Because if there's too much ignorance and passion, it'll be too difficult to understand the pastimes. What happens if there's too much passion in the heart and you hear about Krishna with the gopis?
Cloudy. The consciousness is cloudy.
Yeah. In other words,
increases the lust.
Yeah, lust comes up. Lust is a symptom of the mode of passion. Therefore, you hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. That's why they must be cautiously approached. And if there's too much passion in the consciousness, then lust comes up. We feel lusty. That's not the purpose of hearing the Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And if you're too much in the mode of ignorance, similarly, you'll have a misconception. So therefore, Bhagavatam points out, right, that devotional service, you must come to the platform of goodness. Now, what are the symptoms of goodness which Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita?
Happiness and knowledge.
Yeah, happiness and knowledge, yeah. That's good. And there's one more symptom which is very important, which especially I'm thinking of. Yeah, illumination. Right? Especially, Krishna says, he says many different symptoms, but two symptoms which are very important and very prominent within the mode of goodness are knowledge and detachment. Right? If you can understand if you are coming more into the mode of goodness, right, because you're becoming more detached, less disturbed by the sense objects. Right? When we're too much in the mode of passion or too much in the mode of ignorance, when we're in association with the sense objects, right, with the opposite sex especially, we feel passion and ignorance and lust, right, beginning to circulate within our consciousness. But when we become more in the mode of goodness, right, we can understand, we'll be more detached. We won't be so affected, we'll be more objective. In other words, sometimes we'll feel, okay, we're in a position where we're associating with the opposite sex or associating with some sense object, but we feel peaceful, right, feel detached. Right? That means more into the mode of goodness, and especially Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, he says, Param drishtva nibhartate. If you are very absorbed in the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, even though you may be in the presence of the sense objects, you will not feel disturbed. Right? They will not be disturbing your consciousness. So this is what Krishna is teaching the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are teaching. Gradually elevate your consciousness, perform devotional service in the mode of goodness, very steady, very fixed, and then you can transcend into Shuddha Sattva and you can understand Krishna's pastimes much more easily. Now, just here, Haridananda Maharaj and the other devotees who are writing the commentary, they're quoting from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now, it's interesting because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is he? He's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah, okay, we know that. But who is he? Who is he? Very important acharya. Like that. If you go back through the disciplic succession, right, if we go back through from Prabhupada to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to Gaurabishwanath Babaji Maharaj to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then on Gaudiya's Nityas altar we have Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Right? The next acharya mentioned back is Baladev Vijabhusha, who was the disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And then the next acharya back was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who was a disciple of Narottama Das Thakur. But it's interesting because Narottama Das Thakur and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur were living on the planet 100 years apart. And yet he considers himself to be the disciple of Narottama, right? Because he took initiation off of Narottama and he was able to perceive and associate with Narottama on the spiritual platform. So he was actually associating, he actually took initiation from Narottama, actually became his disciple. but it wasn't manifest in this world. Narottama wasn't physically present. But on the spiritual platform, they actually had this eternal relationship. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he is an amazing commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it is said that he is like a incarnation of the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami. Right? The Acharyas glorify him as being someone who understands the heart of Rupa Goswami extremely well, extremely intimately. So this would say that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was a primary commentator in our disciplic succession, because our entire disciplic succession are known as Rupanuga, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Right? So therefore we're following Rupa Goswami, which means we must learn to serve Krishna under the guidance of Srila Rupa Goswami. And what does it mean to serve Krishna under the guidance of Rupa Goswami? It means that we have to follow the nectar of devotion, right? Which was his instructions how to serve Krishna. Right? So therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur very deeply understands Rupa Goswami's teachings. And it's interesting because you see in Prabhupada's life, there's one point where Prabhupada said he became struck with a particular purport that he wrote, which is a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Does anyone remember that particular?
Yes, I have begun.
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita 241. Then it is mentioned, Bivasa Yapnaka Buddhi, Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Next one.
Bahushaka
Hyanantascha. The words are put around the opposite way. Bahu shaka hyanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. So this is the Krishna says that bhakti yoga, or at that point in the Bhagavad Gita, he calls it buddhi yoga. He says the definition of fixing one's intelligence on Krishna, ekeha, means single pointed. Our intelligence must be single pointedly fixed on Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, what does that mean on a practical level? To have the intelligence perfectly fixed on Krishna. Yeah, to be on the instruction of the spiritual master, the shiksha, right? So this is the definition that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives of perfect intelligence, fixed on the order of the spiritual master. Right, just meditating constantly on the order of the guru. Right? So he says in his commentary, he says in day or night, in sleeping or in wakefulness, he says even in life or in death, I know nothing else but the instruction of my spiritual master. Okay? So this is his penetrating. And Prabhupada said when he read that, it struck him. Right, he became struck. In other words, this is Prabhupada said his entire inspiration to go to the West and to preach Krishna consciousness came from his spiritual master saying to him on their first meeting, if you, you're a very intelligent young man, please study the English language and go and preach in the Western world. And then when he read that, a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he became so struck and so inspired, he understood this was his mission in life. Like that. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is a very prominent acharya now disciplic succession, and in Prabhupada's own life he was a very prominent personality. Right? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written this commentary which we just read before, which the purport is based on. So someone could say, how does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur know what Krishna is saying to the gopis, even in between the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Because we have each verse of the Bhagavatam is there, right? And then in between the Bhagavatam verses, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, oh, but they also said this. And he did the same thing when he wrote his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. Okay? Krishna and Arjuna are speaking. And then he says, but then Krishna also said this to Arjuna. And Arjuna also said that to Krishna. Right? So then the conversation went further. How is it that he can do it here?
So he can tell what is in the heart of Krishna.
That's good. Yeah.
On the spiritual platform,
Yeah, it's actually mentioned that he is actually a Manjari himself. Right? Manjaris, just like on Tulsi, you have the Manjaris. Manjaris means the little new bud. Right? It's a new bud, the fresh bud when it comes. Very soft and very fresh. It's that little Manjari when that comes. So the gopis who are here with Krishna, Krishna is around about the age of 16, Nava Yauvanam. He doesn't go past 15, 16 years old. And Srimati Radharani is eternally, and the gopis are eternally around 15, 16, around about the same age as Krishna. The Manjaris are said to be eternally around about 12 years old. Manjaris means like new blooming bud. So they're a little younger, like new girls, just becoming into their youth, like that. And they are considered to be the maid servants. They consider themselves to be the maid servants of Radha and Krishna. And they're so intimate with Srimati Radharani and Krishna, they even get to perform services which the gopis don't get to perform. Right? They even get to enter into pastimes with Radha and Krishna that even the gopis don't get to see. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is said to be one of these Manjaris. So we can say, how does he know what's going on? How does he know all this conversation, all these extra things which are being said? Because we could correctly say he's there, he's present. He's actually listening to the commentary, or he's listening to the conversation which is taking place between Radha and Krishna and the gopis at this point. So he's not speculating. He's not just saying, you know, Krishna said that and Radharani said this and like that. But he's actually, he has darshan, or actually insight into what's taking place. Now in these pastimes, Krishna shows one of his excellent qualities. If you read in Nectar of Devotion in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, he mentions that Krishna has 64 qualities. Does anyone remember any of the qualities?
Pleasing.
Pleasing, yeah.
Grateful.
62 to go.
Grave,
yep. We're getting genius, yep. Genius.
Linguist, humour.
What's that?
Linguist, humour.
Linguist, yeah, very good. Humour, very good. Yeah. So it mentions, you see, when you read the 64, they're in groups. Right? They're in clusters. Just like when you read the 64 angas of bhakti, Rupa Goswami has clustered them into like items, devotional items you can perform with the body, devotional items you can perform with the voice, devotional items you can perform with the mind. Right, it gives like different groups. And similarly, when you read the 64 qualities of Krishna, he mentions these are like five qualities to do with his voice, his speech. These are five qualities to do with his form or his beauty. These are five qualities to do with his, like that. It goes into different groups. So one of Krishna's amazing qualities is the way he speaks. And he is such an intelligent speaker. He's the most intelligent speaker. Because he is the supreme poet. The supreme, he's the Kaviraj. Right, the supreme poet of all poets. Because here, he's speaking to the gopis and he's simultaneously saying to them two things. Right? It's pretty hard to do that. Right? You say to someone, right, I'm glad that you came here, and then you say to them simultaneously, why did you come here? Right? I'm glad you came here. Why did you come here? So this is Krishna's expertise. Right? And why does he do this? Increase the love, yeah. It increases the rasa. Right? Because Rupa Goswami calls his main work Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. Right? The spiritual world is all about an ocean of unlimited ras. Right? So it gives the gopis unlimited rasa. Right? Because they've just arrived in the forest. Right? Not easy for them to come to be with Krishna. Right? If any of us have an affair with someone outside of our marriage partner, it is considered to be abominable. Right? And the gopis, they know that, and they know that more than anyone else, that it's abominable. But when it comes to Krishna playing his flute in the middle of the night, they can hear him quietly playing his flute somewhere out there in the Vrindavan forest, at Vamshiva, on the shore of the Jamuna in Vrindavan. Immediately they all begin to run into the forest. Right? So they've sacrificed, as they say here, they've sacrificed so much to go and be with him and get to him. And when they finally get there, Krishna says, why did you come? And simultaneously he says, I'm glad that you came. Right? So their rust is increased because they get there and they're so happy that they can see Krishna, who's standing in the tree at Vanshiva, standing in the banyan tree playing his flute. But simultaneously when they arrive there, he says to them, "Why did you come?" Right, in a very mischievous way, which makes them, their hearts, it sinks their hearts, right? They feel so pained, right, that Krishna has said that. But simultaneously, they can see that he's happy that they have come. So simultaneously, they feel such ecstasy. So it increases the rasa. Huh? Just like in Vedic cooking, some of the preparations we have are like sweet and hot simultaneously, like madhupak. Has camphor and black pepper simultaneously. Sugar, camphor, black pepper. So it has sweet spice and also has hot spice, like pepper is hot. But when you put it inside the sweet, right, and you taste it and it's simultaneously hot, but it's sweet simultaneously, that's very far out. Tamal Krishnamaraj gave, I was having prasadam with him in Oxford in 2001, the last time I saw him. And he was going to great lengths to tell me the wonders of this sweet. Like that, because he'd get right into prasadam. He was such like a rustica connoisseur. He'd be taking prasadam, he'd be getting right into it. Right, analysing every preparation and, you know, what's in it. And then he'd start talking about preparations which weren't even on the table. You know, madhupak, you know, and it's like, it's sweet, but it's also hot at the same time. He said, and then he said to me, he said, "That's very far out." He said, "That's very far out." When something is sweet and hot at the same time, he said, "That's very far out." Because he understood, he was a master rustica. He wrote that book that he wrote, Prabhupada Anchalila. That is the only Sanskrit drama in the world which is written in English, which is completely conforms to all the rules of Sanskrit drama which have been written in the Vedas. Like that. So he's actually on a scholarly platform. He's actually considered to be a very knowledgeable person of the science of rasa. Like that. And in his own life he was totally like that. He was just very into rasa. And he understood that rasa was about sometimes conflicting emotions simultaneously would bring out so much extra pleasure. And his personality was also very much like that too. That simultaneously you could be with him and it was like being with the sweetest of the sweet. And he said one time it's like a Krishna conscious chutney. Right? So sweet that you can't stop tasting it, but so hot that you just want to... Yeah, so difficult. So too hot to handle, but too sweet to resist. Right? So this is what Krishna is like. This is what the spiritual world is like. Right? It's not, the spiritual world is not an impersonal place. And it is not unvariegated. Right? As the impersonalists think. They think that the spiritual world is like Brahman, which means there's no variety there. No, it's not like that. It's completely full of variety. It's full of rasas. And it's when it becomes extremely pleasurable for Krishna and the gopis and their pastimes, it becomes full of conflicting rasas. Right? Which simultaneously are there and they give Krishna and the gopis unlimited pleasure. Because these two things to be there simultaneously just increases the pleasure unlimitedly for Krishna and the devotees. And Krishna wouldn't do all these things that he does for the gopis unless it increased their pleasure. Right, he's doing this because he wants to see his devotees' pleasure increase. Just like in the next few chapters, as we read through these chapters, Krishna's dancing with the gopis in the rasa dance, and then he detects that the gopis become a little bit proud. So he detects that they're proud because the Lord does not like pride within his devotees. When he sees the devotees are proud, then what does he do? He just leaves the rasa dance, disappears. Right? And he only does that because it just increases their attachment to him unlimitedly. To the point that they run into the forest looking for him and they start talking to the trees, they start talking to the tulsi bush, they talk to the vines, the flowers which are growing on the trees. They say, "Have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Krishna?" They come across the deer, they say to the deer, "Have you seen Krishna?" Right? And no one is answering them. Right? They're going mad looking for Krishna. And then Krishna thinks, "I'll play a trick on them," so he turns himself into Lord Narayan. Yeah. Right? Has two extra arms. So then they see, and they said, "There's Krishna," through the bushes, and they run, and when they get there, they see, oh, it's not Krishna, it's Lord Narayan. Right, it's God. That's who they believe in. They believe Krishna is their lover, but they believe Narayan is God. So they see God, right, and they say, "Namaskar, my Lord, have you seen Krishna?" like that. And then Lord Narayan, he just remains silent. Actually, it's Krishna. He just remains silent. So they say namaskar. They say all glories, and they just run away. Right? And they're looking for Krishna. So they're running through the forest looking for Krishna. And then finally, when Srimati Radharani comes, and she sees Lord Narayan, and she comes over and she says, "My dear Lord Narayan, have you seen Krishna?" Right? And Krishna, because he wants to engage in pastimes with Radharani so dearly, he cannot resist the opportunity. So then his two arms melt away, they disappear. And then she sees, oh, it is Krishna. Like that. So these pastimes, there are many rasas within these pastimes, but these pastimes are not mundane or material, and they're meant to increase the devotee's pleasure and Krishna's pleasure. Like that. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives very wonderful commentaries on these pastimes in order to allow us some entrance or some understanding into the pastimes of Krishna. Like that. So we should read these pastimes very carefully and try to understand their spiritual nature and the pleasure which Krishna and the devotees. And it's interesting because in the first canto, at the end of the first canto, when Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami meet for the first time, in chapter 19 of the first canto, Shukadeva Goswami appears on the bank of the Jamuna at Hastinapur to meet Parikshit Maharaj. And Prabhupada points out there in his purport, and this is right back in the beginning of the first canto, Prabhupada says the whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam being spoken is that Krishna's pastimes with the gopis can be narrated. And Prabhupada says, because by hearing of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, mundane lust will be cleansed from the heart. This is the entire purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should do our best in the next couple of months while we're reading these pastimes of Krishna and the gopis not to fall asleep in class. That would be very beneficial for our spiritual advancement. Because falling asleep in class is inattentive hearing. And it's not so easy to understand the rasas when you're not awake. So everyone try to stay asleep, at least for the next couple of months. Okay, so we'll stop here. We'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
If you don't mind, tell us something about variegatedness of the spiritual world. Just briefly, key points, variegatedness in the spiritual
world. Yeah, so it means that, as Prabhupada says, this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So everything we see in the material world has its origin in the spiritual world. So it means in the spiritual world there are rivers, Jamuna is there. There are mountains, Govardhan Hill is there. There are trees, Kalpa Vrikshas are there. Right? There's all the animals that we see in the material world, they're all there in the spiritual world. So everything that we see in the material world is there in the spiritual world. So, but the point is, it is made of Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. Just like in the 8th chapter of the Gita, then Krishna mentions or the 7th chapter, he mentions the Mahabhutas, or the great elements which make up this world. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So in the spiritual world, there's spiritual earth, right? Chintamani, right? There's spiritual water, there's spiritual fire, there's spiritual air, there's spiritual ether, like that. That's the point. The point is that everything in this world is a reflection of the original in the spiritual world. So it's full of variety, but the variety is Satchit Ananda Vigraha.
So there are elephants and tigers and all animals?
Everything you see in this world is there in that. It's all there, so. Elephants in Dwarka, tigers, it mentions in the pastimes. Krishna mentions in this section, says tigers.
Samosas.
Samosas and kachoris. Okay. But the, as they mentioned in this purport, the commentators, that in the, Krishna says to the gopis, you made a big mistake coming into the night into Vrindavan forest because there are many dangerous animals. But then Krishna, what he actually means, because when he takes his words a slightly different way, he's actually saying it's very safe here because there's no enmity between any of the creatures here in this forest. So therefore, even though there's a tiger there, he won't eat you. Just like we see with Mahaprabhu when he was dancing and chanting through Jarikanda forest on his way to Vrindavan. then the tigers and the elephants, under the influence of Mahaprabhu's association, Krishna's association, they got elevated back onto the spiritual platform, and they were dancing together, and the deers and the tigers were embracing each other, right, and even kissing like that, and having, and all dancing and chanting together like that. So this is the nature of the spiritual world. There's no fear. There's Vaikuntha, which means free from anxiety. Any other questions?
Gopal Upanishad.
Gopal Upanishad. Upanishad, that's what it's called.
Yes. What are they?
It's a particular Upanishad. There's 108 Upanishads.
Yes.
We have the Sri Ishopanishad, which is, it's said to be the most important of the 108. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad is a very special Upanishad because the Acharyas have mentioned, and I think it's mentioned in the commentaries on Brahma Samhita and so forth, the Acharyas have mentioned that it deals with intimately, I think, with Krishna and even Krishna in the pastimes of the gopis. And all the Upanishads don't necessarily deal with those things. And it is said, because it is said, when Krishna danced with the gopis, there were the Rishicharis and the Shruticharis, right, the Municharis and the Shruticharis. So the Shruticharis means the personified Vedas took forms as gopis to associate with Krishna. So it specifically mentions that the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, which is a Upanishad which is specially attracted to this conjugal mood, took birth as a gopi in order to associate like that. So that's a little bit about it. Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote a book, wrote a commentary on the Brahma Samhita, and in that then it will explain these things when it comes out. Hopefully it will come out soon.
The other question is, why Lord Krishna is saying slender wasted girls to increase their attraction? Slender wasted girls.
Yeah, because they have slender waists, so he's calling them slender waisted girls, and it's a sign of their beauty. If the woman has a slender waist, right, and the breasts are large and the hips are wide, right, it is considered very beautiful, very attractive. So the gopis are the emblem of the personification of feminine beauty for Krishna's pleasure. So therefore they have their slender waist. So Krishna, it's a conjugal way. You only call a woman slender waisted girl if she's very intimate with you and if there's a conjugal relationship. Right? It's not correct to go up to, you know, some lady, right, and say, you know, some Brahmacharini, you say, oh, slender waisted girl, could you please wash the pots? Right, that would be what we call ras abas. Right? That's not proper. Right? That, so the fact that Krishna is speaking like this to the gopis shows that the relationship, he has accepted them as his lovers, right, and they're qualified to be his lovers. So therefore he's speaking to them in a conjugal way. He's trying to arouse conjugal feelings within their heart, and also he has conjugal feelings towards them, so therefore he speaks like that. So it's not improper, but it's above the three modes of material nature. Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.